This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, 16th of August, 2019. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking newspaper. Liz and Gordon Legg have edited the extracts this week. And so we'll begin with our usual regular notices. The first is to say, if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please first check the box is plugged into the mains before you telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. 01962 711 998. As you listen to the recording, remember you can use the buttons on your box to move on for an item before it finishes or back to any of the tracks you want to listen to again. And just one more note for those of you with computers or tablets. As well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, winchestertalkingnews.com. And the full address is www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, the most recent first on the list. So now let's take a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle. Our readers today are Claire Porter.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
And Peter Walker.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Ros Lydiard. Now moving on to the news, here are the headlines. Station approach calls for changes. Lack of joined-up thinking over death of RHCH patient and hospital to consult over major changes. And the first headline story from Claire, please.
Station approach calls for changes. A major Winchester organisation has said changes to a city regeneration project do not go far enough. The City of Winchester Trust, CWT, which works to protect the city's heritage and culture, issued the comments after Cabinet Member for Local Economy, Councillor Anne Weir, outlined changes to the height of the station approach scheme, as well as plans to reduce the amount of planned parking by more than a quarter. It came ahead of last night's scrutiny committee meeting, which saw the changes being discussed as the Chronicle went to press. As previously reported, the changes will see nearly 30% fewer parking spaces on the site than originally planned, as well as a slight reduction in height, a factor which caused the collapse of the original station approach project several years ago. It follows a review being carried out by the Liberal Democrats into the previously Conservative-led major schemes, Station Approach, Silver Hill 2 and the Leisure Centre, after seizing control of the council in May's local elections. Commenting on the changes, CWT Chairman Keith Lehman said, "On the parking issue, the Trust believes that there should be no car parking provided on this site." Excuse me. "In such a sustainable location, next to the railway station, close to the city centre and within walking and cycling distance of residential areas, the council should be leading by example." On the one hand, the city council is supporting more park and ride sites and measures to encourage more sustainable ways of getting to work, yet on the other hand, it is actively promoting employee car parking on its own city development site. On the question of height and bulk, Historic England, the South Downs National Park Authority, the City of Winchester Trust, and many others consider that both the overall scale and height of the offices is too great and will have an adverse effect on the character of the townscape and conservation area and the setting of the city. The amount of office floor space being proposed is significantly in excess of the figure set out in the design brief for station approach development. The Trust urges the new administration to instruct officers to secure further changes to the Carfax proposal before the application is approved and before the site is sold off to a developer. This is the only way to prevent a development which is unsustainable and too large. Responding to the criticism, Councillor Kelsey Learney, Cabinet Member for Housing and Asset Management, said, "The plans for station approach have been reviewed, and we have listened closely to people's views on the height of the building and the parking provision. Both the height and the maximum parking numbers have been reduced, as we aim to create an iconic, sustainable development that supports the city's low carbon future." Speaking to the Chronicle last week when she announced for changes, Councillor Anne Weir, Cabinet Member for Local Economy, said the administration was looking at the scheme with its carbon neutral district pledge and hoped that developers would look to reduce the number of parking spaces further. When asked whether the reduced number of spaces would impact the ability to attract tenants, City Council Strategic Director Chas Bradfield remained positive. He said, "The sort of developers we are interested in are in the regional market. There's considerable interest in a development with less parking." The scheme, estimated to cost £159 million, is set to transform in the area around the railway station, creating 140,000 square feet of Grade A office space, along with a further 17,000 square feet of retail, cafe and restaurant space. Civic chiefs estimate it will provide an £81 million boost to the local economy and create 1,000 jobs. The planning application is expected to go before a City Council Planning Committee in either September or October.
Lack of joined-up thinking over the death of a Royal Hampshire County Hospital patient. A father of six who felt left down by the system hanged himself in Winchester Woodland less than a month after an earlier attempt, an inquest was told. At a hearing this week, Coroner Graham Short said Russell Duncombe had given up hope that his problems could be cured, while also citing a lack of joined-up thinking leading to his suicide. Mr. Duncombe had called an ambulance on the evening of October the 12th last year. He was taken to RHCH with ambulance staff regarding him as a high risk of suicide. But when nurses carried out a handover in the A&E unit, this was not communicated, nor was a risk assessment carried out, as this was not standard practice at the time. Mr. Duncombe later absconded and hanged himself in nearby woodland. The inquest heard that Mr. Duncombe led a chaotic life and had a history of alcohol dependency, which was exacerbated by the deaths of his grandparents and his father in 2015. His mother, Donna Duncombe, said he took it hard losing them and added that he became more withdrawn last year as his problems escalated. She also said he was hearing voices that told him he was useless and worthless and that he shouldn't be on the earth, and that was why he drank. After a suicide attempt in March of last year, Mr. Duncombe was referred to the mental health team. It was noted that while he had some symptoms of depression, his symptoms fluctuated and so he was not diagnosed with a mental illness. Mr. Duncombe again tried to end his life on September the 19th, attempting to hang himself near Andover Police Station. He was then taken to Southampton General Hospital, where he was put on a detox programme, but after a few days he absconded and drank alcohol, ending the detox. A plan was put in place for detoxification at a later date, but clinical guidance prevents more than one detox being administered within a six-month period. Mr. Duncombe had been told to phone an ambulance if he was feeling suicidal, and he did so on the evening of October the 12th. After eventually absconding from hospital, he sent a message to his partner saying, "Busted out of hospital, time to prove a point," before hanging himself. In summary, Mr. Short said the clues were there for the nurse to have been aware of the increased risk, as she knew he had previously attempted to hang himself. He was also intoxicated at the time. Mr. Short added that nobody who was present the night of his death took an overview of Russell's problems, and nor did they recognise that his deteriorating behaviour could have led to him committing suicide. However, he also said there was no clear evidence that if there had been that approach, it would have prevented his death. Speaking after the inquest, Mr. Duncombe's partner, Joanne Rogers, said, "He should still be here. Everyone turned a blind eye. He said, 'I'm just a statistic waiting so you can write me off your list.' And he was right. He was ignored." Julie Dawes, chief nurse at Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, said, "We carried out our own comprehensive investigation into the circumstances surrounding Mr. Duncombe's treatment and have already made changes to improve the way we care for patients in this situation."
Hospital to consult over major changes. Excuse me. Hospital bosses have denied a move to implement, without consultation, changes to where surgeries are carried out. Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, HHFT, which runs Royal Hampshire County Hospital, also denied a date had been set for changes, which could see Winchester Hospital become a hub for elective operations. As previously reported, it is understood that emergency surgery on broken bones could be carried out at Basingstoke Hospital, while Winchester could become a hub for planned hip and knee ops. A report which went before the HHFT board in May supported the move to Basingstoke. It said a major change was recommended in delivery of acute and elective services with a single site for the provision of major orthopaedic trauma. Plans are underway for seven-day trauma services on the Basingstoke site. By combining admissions on a single site, consultants' job plans can be altered to allow a ward round of admissions before and after the daily trauma list to improve compliance with Standard 2, which is currently 33% for this specialty. Standard 2 refers to the need for emergency admissions to be seen and assessed at the latest within 14 hours. The report added, "Work is underway to make the required changes to staffing and infrastructure and job plans will be altered to support the focus on emergency care required by the increase in numbers in due course, expected in October 2019. However, it also included improvements at the RHCH and Basingstoke for the delivery of emergency general surgery services. Denying a rumoured date of October the 7th for the changes, Chief Operating Officer Junior Muskery said, "We are reviewing options for modernising our orthopaedic services to improve patient care. There is no fixed implementation date, and we will be undertaking patient and public engagement and consultation as required before any decision is made. We will be involving patients, staff and other stakeholders to help shape plans and test any changes which aim to improve and modernise orthopaedic care for our population in Hampshire." Winchester's MP, Steve Brine, remained positive about the future of City's Hospital when the Chronicle first reported the plans. Our trust has shown itself in recent months, the opening of the new emergency department being a good example, to be investing in Winchester. And I know there's more to come, which is why we can be positive about the future of the RHCH. It's absolutely right there's an ongoing process, one that is clinically led to ensure we're getting the right care in the right place when we're acutely unwell.
Thank you. And now we're going to move on to the death notices, and that will be followed by Claire reading Christian comment. So starting with the death notices, Ford, John Ford, died 6th of August in Ashbourne Court Nursing Home, aged 83.
Freeman, Linda Freeman, Lynn, peacefully at home in Trowbridge, aged 70.
Martin, Alan James Martin, died peacefully on the Countess in the Countess Mountbatten Hospice on the 4th of August.
Richardson, Barry Arthur Richardson, passed away on the 5th of August, aged 82.
Scott, Leslie Edward Scott, died peacefully on the 4th of August at Sunrise Senior Living. And on to Christian comment now. And the Reverend Philip Crinks is the contributor of this week's Christian comment. It's headed, Walking Barefoot. Intriguing, Claire.
How beautiful are the feet of those who preach the gospel of peace. So at least we say and sing. I don't know how beautiful your feet are, but perhaps like mine, their beauty is far from obvious. The image of St. Swithin high up in the medieval stained glass at St. Cross includes all his usual signs and symbols. A mitre, a crozier for his ministry as a bishop in the 9th century, a halo for his sanctity, a Bible for proclaiming good news, an apple tree where rainfall will christen the ripening apples on St. Swithin's Day in July. Armed with a new photograph of the window taken by the cathedral's splendid glass guide, Julie Adams, we can now see another detail of the image, St. Swithin's feet. These are depicted in a deep, glowing red. In the medieval language of colour, red is the colour of fiery, passionate love and also of the flaming, loving, Holy Spirit of God. Why does St. Swithin have red feet? One of the things remembered about St. Swithin was that if he found any of his churches had not been consecrated properly, he would go thither afoot and hallow it, for he loved no pride, nay to ride on gay horses, nay to be praised, nay flattered of the people. So, perhaps after all those journeys on foot to consecrate churches, his feet were rather red and sore. But St. Swithin's walking has a deeper significance, as the ancient chronicler suggests. It is a sign of humility to walk on foot, and especially barefoot. One excellent book on humility by Stephen Cherry is called The Barefoot Disciple. To walk barefoot is to keep our feet on the ground in more ways than one. The contact with reality it involves reminds that humility, and indeed any love worthy of the name, are partly about giving up our fantasies about ourselves and the world. The Holy Spirit of God lifts us up to Him, but it also purifies us of all which is not of Him. Another sign of humility was Swithin's dying wish to be buried outside the Old Minster when he died, where the feet of ordinary men could pass over him. The famous 40 days of rain in 971 were taken to be God's judgment on those who planned not to respect the saint's wish that his body remain outside. To think of others' feet passing over us at the end of our lives is to practice what Dean Catherine called, in a recent sermon, an honest embrace of the reality of life. That reality is that each of us have the chance to live with integrity and compassion and truthfulness and justice. But in the end, each of us will return to the ground we have walked on, as humble creatures of the great Creator. To embrace that reality is, paradoxically, to find our freedom, in humility and love and the power of the Holy Spirit. And that's by Reverend Philip Crinks, who is priest in charge of St. Faith's Parish in Winchester.
And we're going to move on to letters to the editor now. And there's quite a mixed range of subjects in the letters to the editor this week. And we've selected 12 for you. Richard's going to start us off with the first, please.
Which is from Catherine Howlett Davis. And probably will be a theme we'll return to many times in the future. Sir, I empathise with anyone who has to endure long delays and disruption on the M3, A34 and Junction 9. The lorry drivers who are forced to stop-start their engines and spend many hours on the UK's congested road system also have my full sympathy. People who are under the impression that the new Junction 9 proposal will allow for free-flowing traffic movement and reductions in air pollution are thinking about the short term and forgetting recent history. 29 years ago, in 92-93, the M3 savagely cut through Twyford Down, fragmenting natural habitats and severing the South Downs from Winchester's communities at the gain of only a few minutes of off-journey times from Southampton to London. The current Junction 9 scheme proposes to cut down many mature trees and destroy the homes of numerous local birds, bats, small mammals, fish, insects and amphibians. Parts of Winnell Moor will also be destroyed. Highways England has not committed to biodiversity net gain, as all infrastructure and building projects should. Now, 29 years later, we are again in the position where journey times are slowed, this time with the addition of hugely detrimental effects of illegal levels of air pollution, increasing levels of noise pollution, and rising carbon dioxide greenhouse gas emissions from increasing numbers of vehicles. These critical problems need to be addressed immediately. We are in a climate and environmental emergency, and anyone who is not concerned has not grasped the severity of the crisis. More vehicles equals more greenhouse gas emitted. This is separate from air pollution. The carbon dioxide emissions from our Winchester Junction 9 will travel into the global atmosphere over the next 5 years, 10 years, 25 years, and bring destruction to those who are most vulnerable globally through drought, wildfires, sea level rises, mass extinction, and crop failures. Our own coastal regions will also suffer, as the Environment Agency have already warned. Catherine Howlett Davis, Kingsgate Road, St Cross, Winchester.
And carrying on from the last letter with a similar conclusion, this one is entitled A34 M3 Junction. It is not at all surprising that a new Junction 9 for the M3 has received support in your letter pages. The congestion there is not pleasant. There are two problems. First, for motorways. The more space traffic is given, the more traffic fills the space and the surrounding roads. The greater the volume of traffic, the greater the jams at pinch points further on. Finally, after that, the greater the greenhouse gases and overall pollution. But the second problem is fundamental. Global heating has already started. It is caused by the build-up of greenhouse gas around the world. According to the scientists, governments must make basic decisions before the end of 2020 about how to confront this build-up. If they don't, all of us humans and the many other species on which we depend face a very unhappy time indeed. We do not live in normal times. We have to think outside the box. A process that many people, not only leading politicians, find difficult. But if we do not halt this topsy-like growth of normal things, such as motorways and airports at a local level like Winchester, never mind at a planetary level, we shall suffer the crumbling decay of a vanishing civilization, and instead of mere pollution, there will be pestilence. To prevent this nightmarish situation affecting our children, let alone our grandchildren, we have to act now. This from Jock McDonald, Chairman, Winchester Action on Climate Change in Full Flood.
And here's another on the M3 saga. I was surprised that there were so many letters in the August the 8th Chronicle making the odd assertion that widening the M3 and rebuilding the junction with the A34 will reduce CO2 emissions and pollution from the traffic there. They offer no evidence, and Highways England have not done their homework either. All your correspondents seem to rely on a range of false assumptions: that slow traffic is the most polluting traffic, that the proposed works will remove the congestion forever, that the changes will not attract additional traffic, and that there is no other way of removing the congestion. There are extensive debates about the relative pollution of slow-moving traffic, and the consensus seems to suggest the effect differs vehicle to vehicle and driver to driver. Most vehicles are at their most efficient when they cruise at about 40 miles an hour. However, emissions rise exponentially above that speed. The M3 proposals may temporarily remove a couple of hours per day of slow-moving traffic, but they will encourage far higher speeds at these and other times, with disastrous results for emissions and pollution. There is extensive evidence that widening congested roads simply attracts more traffic, and that the congestion always returns, just as it has since the M3 replaced the original bypass. With more traffic, pollution will be worse than ever. Green groups have suggested a range of initiatives that could remove the traffic without the risk that it will return: making better use of rail freight and passenger services, and spending the money on a frequent network of fast, comfortable electric buses serving the main centres in Hampshire. It is frustrating that your correspondents do not see the merits in these positive proposals. I cannot respect the self-interest of those who seem to care more about saving 10 minutes on their journey home from Whitchurch than they do about the future of our civilization. We must dismiss their spurious arguments and tell Highways England to abandon their plans. And that was from Phil Gagg, St Swithin Street, Winchester.
Jeff Naylor changes the subject. Illegal growth. We shouldn't be too concerned that the UK economy has shrunk for the first time since 2012. All we need to do is expand the activities at which we are good and are the most profitable in GDP, gross domestic product, terms. As reported in 2014, our number crunchers at the Office for National Statistics include in GDP figures an estimation for prostitution and illegal drug use, which in 2009 boosted the economy by 9.7 billion, equal to 0.7% of GDP, and roughly the same contribution as farming, gambling and accommodation services. They were worth more than advertising, which was 0.5% of GDP, and double the contribution of real estate activities at 0.35%. Other illegal activities, such as the smuggling of alcohol and tobacco, already included in GDP to some £300 million in 2014. Therefore, the remedy is clear. The country should legalise brothels, establish a state-controlled drug den in every town, and confirm Britain as the online global casino of choice. This would enable the UK to pay its way in the world, and with trickle-down prosperity, eliminate kids going to school hungry, food bank use, and homelessness. Jeff Naylor, Birch Close, Coldon Common.
A very changing subject on this one. This is an engineering solution in a letter entitled Curb Problem. I am writing regarding the constant problem at the intersection of Jury Street and St George's Street, Winchester, with damage to the step curb stones caused by torsional forces generated by large vehicles as the rear wheels mount the curb. I have noticed that the council has replaced and repaired the curbstone multiple times this year alone. This appears to have been policy for over 10 years. I am wondering why the Highways Department continues to repeat the same action, expecting a different outcome. The step curbstones on Jury Street are replaced and reseated with apparently no thought to resolving the situation that causes the damage. Looking at the corner from the road, from the left, St George's Street, there have been drop curbstones installed at the crossing point. These drop curbs continue around the corner onto Jury Street, but only as far as the boundary of the crossing point between the traffic lights. Given that the damage occurs after the crossing point, apparently affecting the same 8 stones, it would seem sensible to continue the drop curb beyond that point along Jury Street so as to provide less resistance to the torsional forces created by the rear wheels of large vehicles. By replacing the step curbs with drop curbs, the problem may well be solved. It will reduce the cost of repair, reduce the trip, slip and fall hazard, and remove an unsightly problem. This solution from Nick Davis of Winchester.
Parking danger. I read with disbelief your article on Winchester City Council's plans to remove free parking from its car parks in the district's market towns, including Bishop's Waltham. Chronicle, July the 25th. Since the Sainsbury's debacle 10 years ago, and following the introduction of 1 hour's free parking, Bishop's Waltham High Street has grown into a widely respected and vibrant centre, attracting visitors from all over southern Hampshire. Local surveys have found that 80% of people interviewed on a Saturday morning have come to Bishop's Waltham from outside the parish to enjoy the vast array of independent retail outlets and coffee shops. These visitors, together with our local residents that drive to the High Street, are vital to ensuring that this prosperity continues and does not become another High Street with empty shops. Car park charging is a very emotive subject, and Winchester City Council's plans to remove free parking from the two main car parks and the introduction of parking meters on the High Street could have a serious impact on our businesses, with prospective customers preferring to go to out-of-town shopping centres where car parking is free. Of course, businesses come and go, but it is extremely rare for premises to be empty in Bishop's Waltham, and any policy that could result in a trend away from this must be resisted. Good businesses pay good business rates. Barry Nicholson, Chairman, Bishop's Waltham Chamber of Trade, West Hoe Lane, British Waltham.
Michael Shipster complains about a wait for lift. So last Saturday I took my wife Jackie, who's been in a wheelchair for the last 3 years, to Evensong at Winchester Cathedral. Unfortunately, we couldn't get Jackie into the choir stalls because the wheelchair lift, which has been broken for several weeks, is still not working. The cathedral newsletter, Pew News, said that a new chairlift has been ordered and that installing it is of the highest priority. Perhaps the cathedral could seek some assistance in this matter from Norwich Cathedral, which made the national news this week with its successful installation of a full-size fairground helter-skelter in the nave of the cathedral. Michael Shipster, Compton Street, Compton.
And another change of subject, this one entitled Sea Salt Water. As you note in business news, there is a new sea salt shop on the High Street. I've liked this small Cornish enterprise for years. As well as their clothes, I also like the fact that they support students at the famous Leech Pottery in St Ives and sell some of their work along with the clothing. A brilliant new idea, though, is the water fountain in the shop for refilling reusable bottles, no more single-use plastics, and even for having a glass of water with a real washable, reusable glass. A fantastic move, which I hope other shops will follow. Meanwhile, what happened to the suggestion, apparently backed by the council last year, to have new public drinking fountains? Surely a new council that has declared a climate emergency won't let that slip. Even better would be to reinstate the numerous historic ones dotted about the city. There are the obvious well-known ones in the memorial on Oram's Arbour or in the Westgate, for instance, but they can be spotted in other places too. The wall of St Thomas's Church on Southgate Street or the little building that used to be the Ladies' Loos in Abbey Gardens. The one on the Westgate, which is the earliest in the city, even has a second one at ground level for dogs. The one on Jury Street is attached to the Horse Trough Memorial, but I suspect that isn't in its original position and so may never have had a water supply there. Winchester had a Free Drinking Fountains Association committee in 1859. The Chronicle reported on their meetings. 160 years later, perhaps it could be reconvened. This from Judith Martin, Romsey Road.
This letter is headed Death Trap. Les Sherry, Chronicle Letters, August the 1st, asks if local cyclists can explain why so many of them ride on Worthy Road rather than using the cycle path alongside it. As someone who has driven, cycled, walked, and run along that road for the past 20 years, I'm happy to explain why I don't cycle on the so-called cycle path. It's a death trap. Let's leave aside for a moment the broken glass and fallen branches, the slippery wet leaves in autumn and frost in winter, because the road sweepers and gritters only do the road, not the cycle path. The roadworks signs invariably plonked in the middle of the path. No, the real problem is that the path is so narrow and badly designed as to be outright dangerous. There are stretches where it's impossible for a cyclist to pass a pedestrian safely, let alone two cyclists to pass each other, or a parent with a pushchair. The worst section at the Kingsworthy end is not only single file narrow, it's on a blind bend, so you've no way of knowing what's coming towards you. Elsewhere, there's an assortment of driveways and side roads where motorists almost never stop to check what's on the path before they drive in or out. Mr. Sherry could have asked his local councillors or Winchester's MP. I know they have all had communication with Kingsworthy residents who tried to use that cycle path a few times, found it terrifying, and sadly gave up on the idea of cycling to Winchester at all. Local cycle campaigners have raised that path, yet again, in connection with the new Winchester movement strategy, and we're hopeful that this time round something might be done. Winchester is clogged with traffic, and a safe, usable, efficient cycle route between Kingsworthy and Winchester would encourage more people to commute or shop by bike rather than car. The current cycle path does the exact opposite of that. In short, I salute Mr. Sherry for his bravery in using the cycle path at all. It's too dangerous for me, I'm afraid, so I'll stick to the highway. Fortunately, most motorists are understanding and considerate. I realise I might occasionally delay a motorist for a few seconds in their dash to join the traffic jam at Andover Road, and I apologise for that, but until there's a safe alternative, I will continue to use the road. Andy Key, Nuns Road, Hyde, Winchester.
This letter is headed Divided Village. Recently, an article appeared in the Chronicle highlighting the future of the Dove Inn at Mitchell Devers Station. The parish chairman was quoted as saying that the parish council was sitting on the fence as it was a supportive organisation, not a directive one. I disagree. Supportive, yes, but surely the parish council is akin to a board of company directors that has vision and ideas. Then, after proper consultation, it should oversee the coordinated development of projects for the benefit of the community. To sit on the fence is a way of keeping power and control whilst doing little or only what it wants to achieve. Mitchell Dever has suffered because of this approach. Mistakes have been made and opportunities lost. For example, the parish council failed to secure the old cricket ground for the community, and the Lord Rank playing field clearly shows a lack of vision and responsibility. There are other examples as well. Mitchell Dever is, in my opinion, in need of strong and visionary leadership with new ideas and initiatives that will come off the fence and try to unite this divided community. T.T. Martin, Deva Close, Mitchell Dever.
And this one is entitled Nice Surprise. One so often reads and hears negative comment about the NHS in general and hospitals in particular, so I would like to tell you my experience. I recently needed to use the 111 service. I was answered promptly, and after a series of questions, a doctor was arranged to visit me. She thoroughly examined me and decided I should be admitted to hospital. She rang the registrar at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester to arrange my admission, then called an ambulance. This arrived in a few minutes, even before I had time to finish packing an overnight bag. On arrival at the hospital, I bypassed A&E and was taken straight to McGill Ward, where a bed was available for me. No waiting for ages on a trolley. During the next 24 hours, I underwent various tests and was then moved to Shawford Ward, where I received further treatment for a few days. In both wards, the treatment and care were excellent, and nothing was too much trouble for the nursing staff. The food also was excellent. Having seen so much adverse comment about hospitals, I was apprehensive about going in. But I was very agreeably surprised and would not be at all nervous again. This from Maygig, Hursley Road, Chelmsford.
This is a note. Farewell, Reg. May I, through your columns, add a note about the Reverend Reginald Sweet and a reminder about all that he has done for the congregation of the Parish of St. Faith and his work for the Brothers and Hospital of St. Cross and Almshouse of Noble Poverty. Reg, as he is fondly known, was appointed to St. Cross as a non-stipendary, meaning without pay, chaplain in 1999, on a three-year appointment, which has been extended and extended to the present day. Throughout this time, he has given dedicated, unstinting, sensitive, loyal, and most gracious service to everyone. He has successfully presided over six interregnums, the period between one priest leaving and another appointed, which is a record for any clergyman in itself, certainly worthy of mention even in the Guinness Book of Records. Then, in 2012, the trustees and the Bishop of Winchester appointed him Master of St. Cross, much to the delight of the brothers and congregation. This was a worthy and long overdue reward for his services. So here we are, this erudite, much respected and loved priest by the trustees, brothers and congregation, he has to retire as master at the end of this year. However, he remains as honorary chaplain to the Company of Master Mariners, chaplain to the Royal Fleet Auxiliary Association, the Anchorites, and still very involved with missions to seafarers. He continues to be held in high esteem in all of these organisations. As evidenced in these columns over the past few weeks, he will be sorely missed, especially his excellent sermons. But be assured, our regard and friendship for Reg will continue. Trish Spears, and on behalf of his many friends, St Cross, Winchester.
Right, your say now. And the bad weather has been responsible for the cancellation of many events, including Boardmasters Festival in Cornwall. Here's what a few members of the public thought, and Richard will take that one for us, please.
Yes, well, Jill Cawes, who's a teacher of Romsey Road, Winchester, said, given the mud and rain at Glastonbury, I don't quite understand. Boardmasters is an exception, though, as the wind would definitely be a health hazard. Jamie Miller, 36, charity manager of Woolston, said, oh, come on, put some wellies on and live a little. I've been to the Isle of Wight Festival a few times in similar weather and it was great fun. John Bawley, 64, retired naval officer of Mews Lane, Winchester. Boardmasters was entirely reasonable, but others like Boomtown, where they seem to be having a great time, should definitely carry on. And Ziad Griffin, 42, IT manager of Andover Road, which just said, oh, it's just a bit of rain. There are plenty of tents and gazebos, so you can just take a shelter when you can. Even wearing a bin bag is better than nothing.
Have you got any views on that?
No.
Oh, none at all.
To be perfectly honest, I can't say.
Obviously not a festival goer.
No, you wouldn't get me there on any... Well, fine weather or wet.
No. Peter, you look like you were
no,
a festival
not really.
Goer.
I just think wandering around in your ankles in mud is a rite of passage, really. Not that I ever did it, I must admit. But there is a lot of electricity around, so you have to be careful.
That's absolutely right, and it does happen. Claire, were you at Boomtown this year?
No, I don't think I like the mud.
No. We go to a salon for that. Right, and onward. Yes, I need to say to you that if you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And you could even drop in when you are in Winchester. Déjà vu over scheme to revamp Junction 9. Those with long memories will be experiencing a sense of déjà vu over the debate on the £100 million revamp of the Junction 9 interchange at Winnell. Back in the 1980s and early 90s, the major controversy in Winchester was the M3 missing link, which resulted in cutting through Twyford Down. It was needed to ease congestion and reduce pollution. Critics said the work would simply attract more traffic and put more pressure on J9. Now, 25 years on from the opening of the M3, the same arguments are being repeated. Advocates of the major scheme say that it is vital for economic prosperity and easing congestion and reducing pollution. Should the scheme go ahead, there is little doubt that the junctions increase capacity and it will lead to more traffic and perhaps in 10, 20 years, debate about the need to boost the capacity at the other part of the road in Hampshire. At a time of climate crisis, should we not be more seriously looking at weaning ourselves off our dependence on the motor car and also the need for long-distance daily commuting to work? First person this week is contributed by Joanna Lewis, and she writes, "A time to make some noise." And that's for you, please, Claire.
Thank you. A few summers ago, I found myself facing the hot August car journey from hell. I was in southern Africa. I was with colleagues I would rather not have shared a confined space with, and there would be no fixed toilets for 9 hours. So I suggested we played the Desert Island Discs game. Who could come up with the best soundtracks of their lives with the most entertaining reasons? Thank goodness this was pre-Spotify, so we couldn't actually inflict our music on each other. My choice of luxury item won it, Ray Mears. Thinking about that journey reminded me how our summers are punctuated by music as much as travelling. We relax and melt into festivals, outdoor concerts and the proms. So why not carry our love of music throughout the year more? We all have to shift away from buying stuff we don't need, which is destined for landfills we can't have any longer. So getting gratification from non-material consumption will have to mean more. Luckily, taking pleasure from music is the stuff that money can't buy. It can be enjoyed no matter if you're rich or poor. I found out this year just how totally spoilt we are for live music in Hampshire. I made time to catch some of the recitals often given for free in the cathedral. Just sitting down for even half an hour to take time out lets you lose yourself in the moment. I've also been inspired and uplifted by the most sublime evensong performances by Winchester College's choir. One anthem was so moving, I actually dissolved into my own shoulder. Their ability to give tender voice to something so otherworldly and wise to the human condition is beyond touching, whether you're a believer or not. Another highlight was hearing one of America's finest female country singers belt it out in the cellar of the Hyde Tavern. "Your love feels better than tattoos." What a lyric. But why not go further in autumn? Why not join a choir? Or start up a band? It's well known singing regularly in a group has huge health benefits. Heart rate, breathing, stress levels all improve. We are social creatures after all. How else would we have evolved into such successful predators that we are now a plague, according to Sir David Attenborough? The nomads I'm currently writing about are so resilient, able to bounce back from stress or sudden change, because they still do so much as a group. Their acts of communal feasting, dancing or singing are a form of social insurance against the bad times. I'm actually thinking of taking up singing. I've been looking around for lessons. A friend had heard me singing in the car. "Why don't you take up opera?" he suggested. I was flattered until he added, "You've got the figure for it."
Oh!
Derek should be able to walk without the aid of crutches in a few weeks, everyone. If not singing, what about learning to play a musical instrument? Recent scientific evidence has confirmed that the human brain doesn't deteriorate as we age in the ways we've assumed. We've been thinking ourselves old. Instead, we should be exercising it with new challenges. A parent or grandparent taking up, for example, the drums or saxophone might drive their family away in the short term and make them yearn for early death. But in the long term, it could do much good all around, provoking the grandchildren to get playing too. For who has not been moved by the strangulated sound of twinkle, twinkle coming out of a trumpet? So let's go into autumn, determined to try something new and make some noise. And with no meaningful action being taken by the powers that be about reversing climate change, it's worth remembering what happened aboard the Titanic. As it sank, at least the band played on.
Thank you, Claire. Now we're going on to Belgarum. And three items again this week. The first about bus stops, Peter, please.
And this very short one, called The Bus Stops Come in Threes. It has never been clear to Belgarum why there are three bus stops within a few yards of each other on City Road, mostly used by stagecoach and also the park and ride vehicles. One large one would suffice, surely. It doesn't have anything to do with the lucrative revenue from the billboards that adjoin the three structures.
I've got a blocked drain here. In the old days, a blocked drain was treated seriously, and a council vehicle would attend and a powerful pump would suck away the obstruction. The drain on North Walls by the site of the fire station has been blocked for around 6 months. In these days of City Council contracting with outside firms, Belgarum is unaware of who is responsible. If it's Biffer, then it comes as no surprise, as that firm is too busy not collecting household bins to be concerned with unblocking blocked drains.
Claire, please.
Time to climb the spire. They have only been in operation for a few years, but already the vineyards of Hampshire are a must-see, according to a leading travel publisher. Lonely Planet has ranked the 500 most unmissable experiences and hidden gems across Great Britain, Northern Ireland and the Channel Islands for the first time in the Ultimate UK Travel Hit List. At number 170 is the little-known world of Hampshire wine, the vineyards including Rames at Titchbourne near Alresford. Other attractions on the list are hiking the South Downs National Park at number 70, visiting the historic dockyard at Portsmouth was 91st, and riding the Watercress Line steam railway between Alresford and Alton was 234th. Number one on the list was the Edinburgh Festival. Belgarum's eye was caught by the entry for 116. Climb the spire of Winchester Cathedral.
Oh.
Gosh, it's been hiding in plain sight all these years. Presumably, Lonely Planet got Winchester and Salisbury mixed up.
Thank you all for that very much indeed. Right, on now to historical items, with the usual mini-clips of news, starting with 200 years ago. That's 200 years ago, Monday, August the 16th, 1819. His Royal Highness, the Prince Regent, made his appearance on Thursday last to Southampton Water, but only came within the castle, which saluted. If HR8 has been pleased to present the sum of 20 guineas to be sailed for on Monday next. The 30th anniversary of the Hampshire County Club was celebrated on Wednesday last at the White Hart Inn, which was most respectably attended, but not so numerously as on other occasions.
And 100 years ago, on Saturday, August the 16th, 1919. The 1914 show of the Kingsworthy and District Horticultural Association was held on a memorable date, for it was the August bank holiday which ushered in the years of terrible war. Since then, no show has been held till Thursday of the present week, and if the exhibits were below the standard, both in quality and quantity, it was not to be wondered at. And the second item, the postponed wool sale was held in Winchester on Wednesday, over 45,000 fleeces being pitched. There was a good attendance of buyers, but comparatively few farmers attended. The reason, undoubtedly, being that harvesting was quite in full swing.
And two items from 50 years ago, Saturday, August the 16th, 1969. Is that really 50 years ago? Was that yesterday? Anyway, Essex farmer and businessman Mr. John Knowles held a surgery on Thursday afternoon to meet residents from the Uttlebury area who wanted information on his plan to establish a wildlife park at the Marwell Hall Estate, Uttlebury. Armed with maps, villagers walked and drove to see him at a local hotel. Hours later, Mr. Knowles was present as a spectator at a meeting specially convened in the village hall by Uttlebury Parish Council. He saw the meeting reject his proposals by 130 votes to 21 and heard Parish Council Chairman Mr. J. Shaw of Cricketers, Uttlebury, declare, "This is going to be the official policy of this Parish Council." Producing a letter from the clerk to the County Council, assuring him that no decision on the scheme had yet been taken, he told the packed hall, "I'm not sure we've won this fight, but we'll carry it as far as possible." And secondly, following a dramatic rescue by an off-duty policeman who saved a boy from drowning in the River Itchen, the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Stanley Spicer, has appealed for a qualified person to come forward to supervise the city's Bulldrove swimming pool. The rescue took place last week when PC Raymond Chadwick was walking in the water meadows with his wife. Constable Chadwick saw an 8-year-old boy being helplessly swept along under the water while a young girl was desperately trying to hold him up. PC Chadwick plunged fully clothed into the water and brought both children ashore. The two youngsters were unharmed, apart from severe shock.
25 years ago, Friday, August the 12th, 1994, a man living wild in Winchester Woodland told city magistrates of his retreat from civilization after spending 16 years behind bars for an armed robbery he did not commit. The man, 45, of no fixed address, said, "I rarely come out of the forest. I can't handle society." He appeared before city magistrates and admitted possessing a 5-inch blade in a public place, namely the Eagle Hotel Pub, Andover Road, Winchester. The bench adjourned sentencing for probation reports on September the 5th. But not before hearing of his account of his extraordinary life story and lifestyle. He told the bench that as an illiterate 17-year-old, he had been given a life sentence for an armed robbery that he knew nothing about. After 16 years in a prison cell, he then spent 5 years on the run in France, before involvement in a serious road accident left him with an ulcerated abdomen. He told the court that he then agreed to go back to England. He received a pardon and £30,000 government compensation for wrongful conviction, which is in the hands of trustees, who now give him £100 a week so he can pursue his nomadic lifestyle in Woodland to the west of Winchester.
Thank you all for those. Right, now we can take a look at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. First, a notice about the Colebrook Club. You may like to know about the Colebrook Club, which is for people experiencing sight loss. The club holds monthly meetings in Winchester with interesting speakers and a chance to meet other people with similar sight problems. The club aims to entertain and inform, to guide members to other sources of assistance and generally help them. They'll help them with the problems that sight loss can bring. If you'd like to know more, well then contact either Sheila on 01962 866 506. That's Sheila on 01962 866 506. 66506 or Muriel on 01794 388 483. That's Muriel on 01794 388 483. That sounds good. I've done something for the Colebrook Club, and I have to say they really are a lovely group of people, so it's worth looking into if you haven't already done it. Now, what's on in this next period? There seems to be very little, except it's nice to announce that Sir Michael Parkinson is coming back to the Theatre Royal. His Evening with Sir Michael Parkinson will be at the Theatre Royal on Sunday, September the 15th at 7:30 p.m. That's September the 15th at 7:30 p.m. And you can book tickets by calling the box office of the Winchester Theatre Royal. And that's 01962 840 440. 01962 840 440. Concerts in Winchester Cathedral. Well, there's the usual Tuesday concert, which are always worth going to. There's a lunchtime recital in Winchester at 1 p.m. Danielle Lebrard piano is next on the bill. It's free, but there is a retiring collection. I'm sorry. Now, going a little bit further ahead into September, at the Chesil Theatre are presenting In Praise of Love by Terence Rattigan. It's a wonderful story. Is marriage a series of moves that conceal an underlying love? It's a very, very good play. Thoroughly recommend that. Now, for markets, the Winchester's Farmer Market goes on Sunday, August the 25th in Winchester, and Sunday, September the 8th in Winchester. Farmers Market, always worth visiting. Romsey Town Hall. Now, the Romsey Local History Society workshops, open to visitors, are held in the basement every Monday. That's from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. and on Tuesday at 7:30 to 9:30. That's Local History Society. That could be quite interesting. And what have we got now? Oh, yes, Winchester Cathedral. Tudor Intrigue in Turbulent Times. Now, what about that to go on and have a look at? It's Sunday, August the 17th. It's tickets of £15 from the Cathedral Box Office, and that's 01962 857 275. So if you have an interest in history, particularly Tudor times, it's Tudor Intrigue in Turbulent Times. And that, I'm afraid, is all I've got for you on what's on, but they're quite interesting talks in Winchester Cathedral. Right, I'm going to give you now the lighting up times starting on Sunday the 17th of August. The sun will set at 8:23 p.m. and on Wednesday the 21st of August the sun will rise at 6:01 a.m. and will set at 8:15. And we are going to move on to items of the general news. And here are the lighting up times. Starting on Sunday the 17th of August, the sun will set at 8:23 p.m. and on the 21st of August, that's Wednesday, the sun will rise at 6:01 a.m. and will set at 8:15 p.m. And on now to items of general news. Claire, will you start with the first article, please?
Charity grant for camping trip for young people. A grant from the Gannett Foundation earlier in 2019 enabled local youth charity Winchester Street Reach to take a group of young people on a three-day camping trip. The group went to YMCA Fairthorne Manor in Curdridge, where they took part in activities designed to challenge themselves and to encourage team building. The young people were accompanied by the Street Reach youth worker team, who know the group well and were able to encourage them to overcome any doubts that they may have had over their ability to take part in the activities, including a fear of heights. Many of the young people that the team take on the trip have never been camping before, and some have never been away from home on a holiday. YMCA Fairthorne staff were brilliant and provided a range of activities throughout the weekend, which included crate challenge, a zip wire across the river, and a climbing challenge called Jacob's Ladder, rounded off with a campfire on the Saturday night. This all ensured that the young people had an amazing time and made the most of being outdoors. The Street Reach minibus was used to transport the young people, and the trip was a huge success, with many of the group wanting to come back next year. Winchester Street Reach are extremely grateful to the Gannett Foundation, part of the company that owns the Chronicle, for the funding, as the camping residential course could not have taken place otherwise. Winchester Street Reach is seeking to recruit youth workers to join the team to deliver a variety of projects to engage young people and help them reach their full potential. The work will be based in Winchester and surrounding areas.
Council in U-turn after legal threat. County transport chiefs have performed a U-turn on a new policy which resulted in a number of teenagers with disabilities being refused transport to college. Hampshire County Council told 30 families that it would not be providing their teenager transport to and from college as of September, following a change in policy. But the authority has now backtracked and agreed to withdraw the new policy after families contacted a legal firm and threatened the council with legal action. The authority says it will now apply its previous policy for post-16 transport. The council's decision has sparked relief from family of the more than 20 disabled children who were set to be affected by the changes. One mum who didn't want to be named said, "Going to college is so important to my son, and we were devastated when we were told that no transport support would be provided. News of this U-turn has been a huge relief, and means we are all looking forward more positively to the coming months." Legal firm Owen Mitchell say they were instructed by 10 families and contacted by more than 20 other families after the council told them their children would need to attend college to access educational support, but then refused to help them with their transport to and from college. All of the students have special educational needs and are not able to use public transport. Some of the youngsters had previously been provided with transport under Hampshire County Council's post-16 transport policy, only to be told that this was not the case. A lawyer at Owen Mitchell, representing the family, said, "This has been a very emotional time for the families. While we recognise that local government across the UK is facing difficult times, it's welcome to see that the council has changed its position and reconsidered its post-16 transport policy."
New unit set to boost A&E department at City Hospital. Work is underway to create a new unit that will help people attending the emergency department at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital get the treatment they need sooner. The same day emergency care, or SDEC, unit will allow patients to be seen and assessed by specialist clinicians sooner, reducing the likelihood of them requiring overnight stay in hospital. Building work is already underway to create the unit, which it is hoped will open in early autumn. It is located next to the newly redeveloped emergency department at Winchester Hospital. Julie Dawes, chief nurse at Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, which runs Winchester Hospital, as well as Andover War Memorial Hospital and Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital, said, "We are all really excited to see the new unit take shape. The aim of the same-day emergency care unit is to give patients access to many of the services available to inpatients, such as assessment by senior medical staff and diagnostic scans, without needing them to be admitted to the wards. As well as being identified as suitable in the emergency department, some patients may also be directly admitted to the unit by their GP or the ambulance service. Patients suitable for admission to the unit will mainly be those who need to be assessed urgently but may not require a hospital stay. This includes patients showing symptoms of conditions such as appendicitis, blood clots, gallstones and pneumonia.
Nursery children learn about Titanic at museum. Following a recent class project on the topic of the Titanic, children from Maples Day Nursery in Winchester were delighted to take a trip to Southampton's Sea City Museum. At the museum, preschoolers from the Ofsted-rated Outstanding Day Nursery in Hatherley Road were able to explore the vast Titanic exhibition, which documented the famous story of the ship and the people on board it. Here, children were able to try on traditional clothing from this time, view the property that was found on board, shovel coal into a replica engine fire, and even try their hand at signalling the SOS horn. Maples Day Nursery Deputy Manager Chelsea Basley said, "Visiting the museum was a wonderful learning experience for the children and the perfect way to finish our project. They were captivated throughout, and even the museum staff were amazed by their knowledge."
Muslims seek opponent base. A group has launched a crowdfunding campaign in the hopes of creating Winchester's first mosque. It follows better than expected turnouts for Ramadan celebrations held in the Kasson block in St George's Street earlier this year. According to the Just Giving page, the Winchester Islamic Network has negotiated a rent of £1,000 a month to continue using the space, so they've initially set a target of £12,000 to fund it for the first year. Aisha Larousi, representing the group, said that nothing had been officially agreed and that the group was able to afford in the city. Sorry, that doesn't quite make sense, does it? She said, currently, we don't really have any...
Stop you, I'm sorry.
Sorry, I should have... Muslims seek a permanent base. A group has launched a crowdfunding campaign in the hopes of creating Winchester's first mosque. It follows better than expected turnouts for Ramadan celebrations held in the Kasson block in St George's Street earlier this year. According to the Just Giving page, the Winchester Islamic Network has negotiated a rent of £1,000 a month to continue using the space, so they've initially set a target of £12,000 to fund it for the first year. Aisha Larousi, representing the group, said that nothing had been officially agreed. Currently, we don't really have anywhere. During Ramadan, we had a place where we could gather the community to do our prayers and practice our religion. We saw there was such a high demand. We just want somewhere where we can all come together. Currently, the group says it has a few monthly sponsors, but not enough to fund the rent. It hopes that by raising enough funds, it'll be able to build a base to grow its community and fundraising activities. Miss Larousi said there were around 50 people coming to the evening meals during Ramadan, so she expected the mosque to attract around 100 regulars. Currently, Muslims wanting to use a mosque have to travel to Southampton. As well as using the mosque for prayers and religious celebrations, the new facility would be open to the wider community and was described by Miss Larousi as being a multi-faith centre, who added, "We'd welcome anyone and everyone." As previously reported, the City Council said it had been working with the group to find a home. A spokesman said last month, "We have been in discussion with the association about the creation of a multi-faith centre for some time. We're considering the options for the building on St George's Street and will continue to support the association to help them find their accommodation to fulfil their ambitions."
Police to crack down on speeding drivers. Hampshire Police are beginning a fortnight-long crackdown on speeding motorists. Police have promised to step up patrols and increase the number of mobile speed cameras. The crackdown, which started on Monday, has been organised in partnership with Thames Valley Police, is part of a countrywide campaign by the National Police Chiefs Council. The aim is to remind people of the dangers of speeding and help to ensure everyone has a summer to remember for the right reasons. Road Safety Sergeant Scott Kerr said, "A few miles an hour over the speed limit or travelling at inappropriate speed can have catastrophic effects upon road users and their families, many of whom also suffer lasting and profound consequences."
And I'm afraid to say that's all we have for you this week. But before we go, another reminder that Mary Davis is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number again is 01962 711998. And we want to say thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, to our editors, Gordon and Liz, and, of course, many thanks to our readers, Claire.
Bye.
Richard.
Goodbye.
And Peter.
Bye.
And that's from me, Roz. Until the next time, goodbye. Would you please put the memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible. We look forward to reading for you again, and in the meantime, take care. Goodbye.